Hi, everyone. My name's Greg Knight.
And I'm Ricardo Avila.
The Popping Collars marketing department has let Ricardo and I know that we have a problem with attracting and retaining younger listeners. You know, because we're old.
So we've recently purchased a Zoom Millennial Translator for our podcast promos so that young people will finally know what we're talking about. Let's fire up.
Since we're the longest running Episcopal podcast, we have a lot of shows sitting in our archives.
Stop the cap. You are straight up wiling. All that mid stuff is TLDR.
That's why we have the PC Side Pod Take Two, which allows us to go back and reevaluate some of our past episodes.
Leo pointing meme. Stop gaslighting me, bro. You're trying to red pill me right now with this Finsta account. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, God.
I don't even understand. What is Leo pointing meme?
For real, we haven't always had the greatest takes in the world, and some pop culture has shifted pretty significantly. Take Two gives us the chance to admit where we made mistakes and highlight how pop culture has evolved over the last couple of years.
I was today years old when I learned about this. I apologize. I was not familiar with your game. You got that dog in you. NGL, I did not have this on my 2023 bingo card.
So check out Take Two right here on the Popping Collars feed and relive our wisdom and more frequently our embarrassment firsthand.
This is fine. We live in a society. Chef's kiss. I was this close to rage quitting, but this idea is pretty grammable. Y'all are the GOAT Episcopod. G-O-A-T Episcopod.
Okay, Ricardo, we can turn off the translator and head off to lunch now.
I could go beast mode on some food right now. TTYL, peeps.
We may have a problem.
What is TTYL?
Talk to you later.
Oh, for God's sake.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the island. Would all sing, he would take wrong key. So they
wrote, hi, I'm Greg.
I had to get coffee, sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Still waking up over here.
I just had my notes pulled up. I didn't see where you were.
I walked away. We're getting off to a great start.
I know, right? I'm just going to leave all of this in. Okay, here I go. Hi, I'm Greg.
Hey, I'm Ryan.
And this is PCTV, a Popping Collars side project where we randomly select a current TV show that you should be streaming right now. Ryan and I have each picked 6 shows apiece from the top streaming apps. And this month, we're talking about the Hulu series, Legion.
Just tell me what happened next.
Look.
I don't know. It's fuzzy. You went off your medication.
Wake up.
Why? We're just looking for the truth.
David!
Which you promised to tell.
David! I told you they took her.
Sydney Barrett, the girl who disappeared.
She didn't disappear. She took my place, and I took hers.
Wait, what?
It was her power, I think.
Can you explain that?
So was he crazy, or...?
Continue. He believes he's mentally ill. But he may be the most powerful mutant we've ever encountered.
Can we take a break? Please.
Of course.
Let's take a break. Stop.
We can skip that part. Unless you think it's relevant to...
No. I mean, we don't have to.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
I know what I am.
What's that?
Ryan, this is an oldie but a goodie.
I am Legion.
You know, low key, that may be Well, I was going to say the scariest story from the Bible, but I guess it's one of the scariest. It's maybe the scariest story of the New Testament. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, let's not, you know, the raising of Lazarus and the resurrection, that'd also be pretty terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weren't those folks dead? Now they're back.
Right. Exactly. Well, and especially with Lazarus, with the funeral wrappings like falling off of
like
him.
A mummy.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty terrifying. Okay. Yeah. I have a
Legion. Do you want to? Yeah, you need to tell people what Legion's about, because even as a comic book fan and a Marvel fan, I was unfamiliar with this when it released back in, what was that, 2010? No,
2017.
2017.
Yeah, it's actually not as old as you would think. Yes, I have a brief description of Legion. It goes like this. David Holler is a troubled young man diagnosed as schizophrenic, but after a strange encounter, he discovers special powers that will change his life forever. Okay, so that is a description of maybe a character of the show, but maybe not a description of the show.
That's like looking through a pinhole.
Exactly. So here's how I would flesh out this description if it were up to me. I would say Legion is what happens when you take a very obscure comic book character from sort of Marvel. You detach it from everything that you've ever thought a comic book story looks like or feels like, and you put it into a David Lynch film. And that's Legion.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
It's bizarre. I think that this show has more in common with Twin Peaks than it does like any other comic book series that you've ever seen before.
Well, it's so stylistically different than other Marvel series like Luke Cage or Jessica Jones, and I'm thinking for the casual fan, slightly less familiar characters, possibly. It's much more akin aesthetically to Loki, just in terms of some of its visuals. But even then, I think it's a supremely grounded series.
Yeah.
Even as it's about superheroes, but it kind of turns the fantastical or the superpoweredness of that up to 11 in some cases. I don't know where do you want to start? Because I've got a couple places I want to get into narratively about why I think this series is really good.
I'll tell you why I picked the show for us to talk about first. And then maybe I'll turn it over to you for like your initial takes on the show.
Yeah.
But the reason that I picked it was because this is the show that gets at the ethos, I think, of the X-Men sort of franchise better than any other, which is to say that, you know, the beating heart of the X-Men stories is that these are people who are born a certain way, who live in a world that hates and fears them. Right. Like that's the log line, basically, of any X-Men comic. And the thing about this show, Legion, is that David Holler, when we're first introduced to him, we don't know if he has powers, if he's just confused, if he's mentally unwell. But we do know that everyone around him is afraid of him and maybe hates him, right? And the way that sets up your worldview moving forward, that's a really powerful thing to happen to someone, you know. And of course X-Men comics have become sort of social commentaries on race in America, on sexual orientation in America, anyone who sort of feels othered, right?
Yeah, immigrants.
X-Men sort of take on the responsibility of sort of standing in for those people. And I think this show does that better than any other X-Men property that exists in pop culture.
I like that. Take the genre, zoom out on the genre. I think it does a great job of, I don't want to say like, if this were real, this feels like what it would be like. So not only to discover that you have powers, and much of the series is David trying to either repress that he's being, and I'm going to come back to this later in kind of the theology section. He's either trying to repress that, or it's in some way try to control it. As the series progresses, use it. And then there are people, to your point, who either fear him or hate him or want to use him for their own ends. So I think in that way, it's quite good. And that's what I meant earlier by saying that I think it's really grounded. And of course, he's not the only person that has special abilities, right? But his are so, he has a power that what are you, maybe halfway through the season when you realize he may be the most powerful person on the planet.
Right.
Especially if he learns how to harness it and use it. So that's, to me, I think that was what attracted me. I remember watching the first season kind of in real time because it premiered on FX, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was like a hour long drama on FX.
I think I was probably DVRing it and watching it, you know, and I remember watching a couple episodes, you know, multiple times. So, and for me, rewatching that first season recently, it still felt entertaining and provocative in that way. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of our conversation will be about the first season because I think that's the best season of the show. It's also probably the one that's freshest in our minds from our recent rewatch of it. The thing about that first season is that it does something really clever. And we should shout out the show creator, Noah Hawley, right? Because Noah was responsible for the Fargo series that was on FX.
Which does something similar, right? It's taking a property and really turning it upside down.
Exactly.
Inside out. Like, it's really cool.
But playing with the convention of the storytelling too, right?
Course,
so he plays with what it was that the Coens did in their movie, but then he upends a lot of your expectations of like what that story is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you realize that it's not a continuous story, it's, you know, an anthology series. Yeah. And now you can jump around in time. You can jump around in location. Yeah, then like all bets are off for that series. But, you know, Noah Hawley has this, just a really creative person and obviously has a real sort of deep knowledge of film and television and storytelling and has a knack, I think, for good adaptation, which I think this Legion story, it feels like an adaptation of like science fiction, or it feels like an echo of David Lynch. I've already brought David Lynch's name up before, but it feels like he's trying to tap into like what would a David Lynch story look like in 2017. And I think that he does a really good job of tapping into like that language of, you know, a little weird, a little scary. A lot to kind of figure out, you know,
very unsettling in some cases.
Yeah. The scenes of the Shadow King. So we should say that, David has a, what would you call it? Like a
parasite,
a sort of parasitic. Yeah.
It's a demon. Like it's, he's possessed.
Yeah. He has this malevolent sort of mutant that's taken up residence in his brain.
Do you know what love is? A chemical. Electrons in your brain sending signals. Are you familiar with Ophiocordyceps unilateralis? It's a fungus that infects ants. It's amazing, really. The spores take over their central nervous systems and force them to climb to a high point, and then the fungus begins to grow up, bursting the tops of their heads like a branch, and it kills them, of course. Also, It can spray new spores over the jungle, infecting more ants. When people say love, that's what I think of.
Simple, I haven't seen it was all I...
Tell me, what is the point of all this love? All the striving, the friendships. I mean, what is the point of babies?
You mean life?
Yes, life. What is the point of life? All of you running around trying to what? Be happy? Fulfilled?
Well, you tell me.
I'll say this. There's only one being in the vast multiplicity of space that matters. God. And do you know why God matters? Power. That is the point of what you call life.
He has visions of this creature periodically, and it's maybe one of the most unsettling TV monsters ever when he shows up. You know, it's this sort of yellow-eyed devil thing. And it's pretty creepy. Like it'll make you sit up straight a little bit on the couch when you're watching it. With that sort of serving as an introduction to the show, what's your best scene, sequence, episode, or storyline from the series?
I'm going to do something different than I think I've done in this section in previous conversations. My favorite parts of the show, beyond performances, and we'll get to that. I think that's the next point. Any special effects? I think the special and visual effects in the series are just, they're cinematic. I think they're fantastic. Anytime that I love the scene, there's a critical moment in the series where David, you think about like a hinge moment in a person's life. And there's one where his power is unintentionally unleashed and the kitchen explodes, if you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back to that a lot in slow motion. I love that. And then, anytime he exercises power, I think it's in episode 7, the next to the last episode, when he basically flicks a hand and all these soldiers form up into a pile.
Right.
And they just stay there. And it's like almost like an obelisk. So I love that. I think they're, what they spend on this series must be astronomical, in terms of, you know, it's not Game of Thrones probably, but yeah, I love that feature of the series. I think it works incredibly well.
Yeah, when they do break out the sort of digital effects.
Yeah.
You know, they generally hold up. I would say you can sort of see the seams, you know, with 2024 eyes, you can probably see the seams a little bit more than you could at the time when it first released. I would say though that gosh, the practical effects on this show too are really great. You know, I think it tends to lean more into the practical, like these fantastic sets and, you know, really strange costume and makeup. And those are just as impressive, I think, as the digital.
No, you're right. Yeah. For sure. I mean, and you can see how you know, likely they were able to manipulate a handful of sets for many, many purposes,
mm-hmm.
Especially thinking about the main room of the kind of the psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
I like that element too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing is that this is a show that's sort of set in the real world, but it's also set in David's kind of imagination. It's this place called the Astral Plane. It's like this psychic world that mm-hmm. can be whatever the people who can manipulate that want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it has sort of those, a little more of those Lynchian sort of fantastic elements and some really creative set pieces along the way too.
So. You know, one of the things that we didn't talk about earlier, and there's kind of an Inception feel to this series where you're always questioning what layer are they in?
Yeah.
Whether they're in the astral plane, whether it's a, just something in David's mind.
Right.
It's always, you're kind of always on your toes trying to figure out where are we?
Yeah, that actually leads directly into my best scene, that idea, which is it's from the very first episode, and it's when David's being interrogated by Clark, who's sort of this representative of Division 3.
Kind of like a CIA kind of thing, right?
Yeah, it's like this, it's like this sort of black ops kind of, you know, off the books government, you know, organization. But they have David captive. And when you're first introduced to them, you know, it seems as if something's sort of gone wrong at David's hospital and they're interrogating him to figure out like what happened. And he starts talking about, you know, magic powers and transferring bodies and things like this. And they just kind of, they treat him as if he's, as if he's not quite all there, right? As if he's fantasizing all of these things. And they repeat them back as if they're totally, you know, off the charts of like saying, you think that you have special powers. You think that you swapped bodies with somebody else, you know, really skeptically. And for a while there as an audience member, you're just kind of like, okay, wait a second. Does he have powers? Is this... You know, is this all in his head, right? And then it sort of peels back the curtain and shows you, no, this part's real. Like the part that he has powers is real, but the way that those powers manifest, you're going to be second guessing yourself throughout the entire show. And I love that it establishes that dynamic at the very beginning, where at the very start you're questioning like what kind of show you're in. And it maintains that throughout the rest of the run, even up until the later seasons where you're not quite sure if David is a hero or a villain because he seems to be a little bit of both. You know,
I wonder if there's given the level of sophistication and the storytelling, to go back to what I like about the show with kind of special effects, visual effects, I think they're perfect. And I think there's some ways in which they're used sparingly, certainly the power portion of it, right? An individual power. I think the sophisticated storytelling allows you to play with the visuals practically or digitally in ways that are probably super efficient or I don't know, that just feel really smart. I don't know. Hopefully this makes sense. When you don't necessarily need all of this, the special effects and the bells and whistles, if you have a narrative that has you constantly questioning where and when you are.
Right.
Right. And the motives of different people, the nature of certain characters, like that's just to me, like once you kind of capture that complexity, which is part of the appeal of the series for sure, then all that other stuff is just kind of icing on the cake.
Yes. I feel like this is becoming a bit of a crutch for me in this conversation, but just like with Twin Peaks, right? Whenever you think that you understand the dynamics of the world of Twin Peaks, something will come in and sort of upset all of that, right? So like by the time you find out who Killer Bob is on that show, all of a sudden we've already transitioned to like a different way of thinking about evil that's not about people. It's about like this force that sits over the town, right? And by the end of that show, at least the first version of that show before Twin Peaks The Return, Agent Cooper becomes your bad guy. Kind of not dissimilar from this show where it's like, you know, this guy that you've been following along the way and you're hoping that he starts to understand his powers. But, well, it turns out that when he finally does understand his powers, that's probably not great for everybody else, right? Because now he can manipulate the world however he wants to, which makes him sort of the ultimate supervillain. So what's your best performance? Who did you come for and stay for?
Well, at the time when I watched it, I don't know that I had anything because, you know, Dan Stevens had just come off of or was still on Downton Abbey. And I remember this being such a shift.
Yes.
But also go watch The Visitor, everybody, if you haven't seen that. That is, or The Guest.
Yeah.
The Guest. That, what a turn. So I think at the time it may have been, oh, let's see what he's up to in this, because this looks completely different from Downton Abbey. But there were a couple of actors in there that I wasn't familiar with, but that I've since become a fan of. So I don't know if it's the kind of come for, stay for tension here. But one person that I've been watching recently in another series, Tokyo Vice on Max, is Rachel Keller. So she plays the love interest in this series, Sydney Barrett. And she's really an interesting character because she has the ability to swap bodies just by touching somebody. So she's kind of madly in love with David, but they can't touch because
right,
goes crazy. I think she's just a really good actress. She's got a neat role in this Tokyo show on Max. But I am here for always Jermaine Clement. I just,
yeah.
His character, Oliver, who is probably in the midst of a weird show and a weird cast of characters, probably the weirdest storyline, because I'm still not sure what's happened to him.
I mean,
what's happened to him going into season two, but how he ended up frozen in time in literally in a cube of ice. But A, I want all of his suits. And B, I love the fact that he just walks around with a martini glass that is never empty.
We are here to talk about human nature. Wait. A quote. A great philosopher once wrote, "In times of peace, the warlike man attacks himself. This is the root of all our problems. And by this, I mean we. We are the root of all our problems. Our confusion, our anger, our fear of things we don't understand. Violence, in other words, is ignorance. There are two kinds of stories we tell our children. The first kind. Once upon a time, there was a fuzzy little rabbit named Frizzy Top who went on a quantum fun adventure only to face a big setback, which he overcame through perseverance and by being adorable. This kind of story teaches empathy. Put yourself in Frizzy Top's shoes, in other words. The other kind. Oliver Anthony Bird, if you get too close to that ocean, you'll be sucked into the sea and drowned. This kind of story teaches them fear. And for the rest of their lives, these two stories compete. Empathy and fear. And so I bring you tonight's play. A work in five acts about a fuzzy little bunny who got too close to the ocean. And what happened next? Let us begin.
And then I think he's just, Jermaine's one of the sneaky, funny guys that, you know, and he seems so selective about what he works, you know, what he works on.
Yeah.
He shows up, it's always such a treat.
I feel like they just let him kind of go for it too. You know, it's like, we want you to do the Jermaine Clement thing, but just like dial it up, you know, to 11, just go all the way with it. And he's so sort of smarmy, but charming, you know, it's just, it's hilarious and funny, but also a little, you know, villainous, especially when the Shadow King sort of takes him over and stuff. So, he's something. I probably came for Jermaine Clement because, you know, I don't think enough could be said for just how amazing the whole, like, Flight of the Conchords series and everything that sort of, you know, for a while there was just like that huge, like, New Zealand film stuff kind of like going on, and Jermaine was kind of always at the center of all of it.
We do in the shadows.
Exactly. So I love Jermaine. I probably watched this series for Aubrey Plaza to start. And the reason is because she would have been either ending or coming off of Parks and Rec. at this point. And I remembered thinking that, like, okay, well, that's a very defined character on Parks and Rec. So how does she sort of break out of that mold? And boy, does this series give her the chance to just really go and sort of play and bring a little bit of that edge that we kind of know from the Parks and Rec character, but also bring some sinister stuff into it, some sexy stuff into it, some playful stuff into it.
You are right. That may be the broadest range of for a character.
Yeah,
because she's asked to do a lot, from being a therapist to essentially becoming a manifestation of this demon, right?
She's the devil on the shoulder, right? Like, she's, mm-hmm. you know, if the yellow-eyed devil is the, you know, the scary part of this sort of manifestation, she's like the
allure,
you know, dolled up tempter of this creature, you know, and she does it just so well, just incredibly well. So those are probably the two that I came for, but I can definitely tell you that I stayed for Hamish Linklater. Hamish, who probably most people listening to this podcast would know from Midnight Mass, because I think we talked about it so much on like our regular Popping Collars.
Uh-huh.
I mean, his turn in that show was just flat out incredible, to the point that I think he actually kind of took some time off from acting after Midnight Mass. I think it kind of messed with him a little bit. He's back in that Manhunt series on Apple TV right now.
Oh, cool. I have to check that out.
Yeah. So I think he's getting back out there with some stuff. But, you know, when he showed up in the first episode of this, and I had forgotten that he was in this series, and immediately I was like, oh my gosh, yes, let's go. And like, Hamish, I can't wait. So it was one of those where I was surprised by an actor that I, you know, should have known was in the show, but I totally forgotten that he was in. And so having the retrospect of seeing later things that he did after the show, like in my mind while I'm watching this again, I just thought it was, yeah, it was great.
David.
No, David is gone. She took him.
It's our time now.
Who the hell are you?
I am Legion. I am Legion.
No. Oh. Hmm.
What's happening?
He's fighting me. I don't know how much longer I can hold. Kill me.
You or him, you?
His body, this body, kill it.
But you're in there.
I'll jump back.
No.
I am Legion. Too late. She's here. She's fighting us. We need David back.
How?
Touch her. That's how she does it.
Will that work?
What if she tricks us again?
What if she uses her powers?
She can't trick us if she has no mind.
I am Legion.
Come back to us, David. Come back.
Let's go to Theology Corner. I feel like we've already touched on like the big one, which is the name of this series is Legion. And I think that's certainly that is absolutely where the character in the comics of Legion, that's he got his name from that story from the Bible, the story of the man really? Possessed by demons. Jesus confronts him and asks who he is, and the man says, "I am Legion," for there are many of us. The reason is because in the comics, David is not schizophrenic. He has multiple personality disorders. So he has he has sort of multiple personalities that are in his mind that are vying for control at any given time. And so the comic creators named him Legion because he sort of has like all of these voices that are kind of floating around inside of his head. But, you know, a biblical, you know, idea and a really, like I said before, a really sort of scary idea. Of all of the stories in the New Testament, this is one that is a little bizarre. You know, Jesus sort of calls out these demons and sends them into pigs, and then the pigs run off the side of a cliff and die. You know, it's just, it's a very sort of strange story that doesn't necessarily have, apart from the healing of demons, doesn't really have like a you know, a redemptive narrative or any kind of uplifting narrative, you know, that we would usually associate with the Bible.
Are you saying it's a cliffhanger? I'm done. I'm out. See you guys next time.
That's PCTV for this week. Yep. Thank you all.
Yeah, well, that you also just in this case, like, people have these issues and the brain is a weird thing.
It's this organ that you can't control, but it controls you, right? Like, it controls the way that you see the world. It controls the way that you process information.
We don't know.
We had the benefit of having a neurologist come to Bethesda a couple of months ago and do a presentation about brain chemistry, so neurology, and how it affects the way that we think of the world spiritually, right? And he had this really cool statement, which is like, one, you know, there is no, I mean, there, like, the brain is on the spectrum, right? So there's no set rules of what the brain can or can't comprehend. It's all sort of individually based. Now, on that spectrum, most people fall into this middle section where they can sort of understand metaphor. They can understand goodness, kindness. They can understand all of the values that religion attempts to explain, right? But on one side of the spectrum, there are people who have no capacity for understanding any kind of spiritual, like, learnings whatsoever. They can't think metaphorically. Some people can't think ethically. Their brains just won't allow them to. And so if you try to explain a religious concept to them, it's like talking to a wall. They can't fathom what it is that you're trying to tell them. And then on the other side, there are brains who are so massively given over to the ideas of religion that they're so easily exploitable by people who are looking to take advantage of those kinds of people.
That doesn't happen.
Well, these are the people that are constantly falling. You know, every time you see these scams online, you know, with like the Nigerian prince or whatever latest scam is out there, these are the people that are falling for it because their brains are just prone to such goodness and compassion towards humanity that they're like, well, yeah, okay, you say you need gift cards, great, I'll send you like $5,000 in gift cards. And they have no way of thinking that, like, there are human beings that are trying to take advantage of them. Now, yeah, like I said, most of us fall in the middle, but there are people that are on these outside edges. And so, you know, a lot of things that we think of as normal, quote unquote normal, there are humans walking this earth that would not consider that normal whatsoever.
One of the questions I had, which may be a theological or spiritual, have some spiritual implication, is, you know, what if the stories we're told about ourselves are a lie, especially from religious figures?
Yeah.
So David is told many things about his condition, right? By people who either want to use him or who fear him and want to destroy him. And I think we question a little bit throughout the series who's right and what's true. But I think as the series progresses, you realize that Division Three are they're just feeding him lies about who he is. So, and to your point, back to the beginning of the episode, when you talk about how X-Men functions or has traditionally functioned in our culture to, as a stand-in for the other, I think we see that time and time again in the comics and in even in some of the films that are inspired by those comics. And then another note I had was, well, two other notes. I love the scene in episode three where Sid chases David. And I think she's chasing him through the astral plane, but she is either choosing or only seeing him as a child as she does so, which I think is profoundly empathetic, right? Mm-hmm. She almost, it's an act of almost ignoring all of the bad things that he's done. And she's aware of the bad things that he's done. And I think there's this idea of seeing him as a child is an act of compassion and empathy and trying to find, you know, this recognition that he is not only the bad things that he's done. So I kind of like that. And then finally, and I think somewhat related to that, I forget which episode specifically this was, but Oliver, played by Jermaine Clement, talks about there are two ways that you can tell a story, mm-hmm. either out of empathy or fear.
Right.
And I like that as well. So those are my.
Yeah. I would say in our modern day, those who suffer from mental health crises are typically like unhoused, right? They tend to be, folks that we see on the street. They tend to be folks that, can't hold down a job, can't hold down family relationships. These are sort of the social outcasts, right, of our day. I think that there's something that this show gets at, which is, you know, you can be the most empathetic person in the world, but if you can't get through to someone, there's nothing quite like that level of frustration and that level of sort of helplessness and hopelessness, right? And so, yeah, I think that this show takes mental health very seriously. I think it takes the characters who have sort of mental health crises very seriously. You know, we're talking about a superhero show, and I know that a lot of people are like, wait, are we saying that there's like magical schizophrenics in the world or something? And no, it takes David's condition seriously, but it also takes the condition of those who are trying to help him seriously as well, which I think mm-hmm. is important. Let's talk industry a little bit, although I don't know that there's a whole lot to say about industry. I think last time we talked about, I think we've talked about FX in the past mm-hmm. and about like how this network that started off as like a discount HBO has become something greater.
Well, but, and a lot of that was under the leadership of John Landgraf, who, I mean, right. they took some real chances. And this was one of those, I think.
That's kind of what I wanted to say, is that I think that we're seeing FX do this again right now in 2024,
okay.
which is that I think that FX is doing a great job of seeing what the future of television is and getting there before everybody else. So, and I'm specifically talking about Shogun, which is currently yes. on FX right now.
That may have to be a series we have to pick.
It may be, because
for the
it's
first
just,
episode alone,
it's just phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
Like this is taking the lessons from HBO of like, oh, I really liked, you know, the palace intrigue of Game of Thrones, you know, and taking the dragons out of it and taking like and setting it in an historical period and taking like these characters seriously, but also taking a known property that was a mini series back in what, the 70s or whatever when it came out. And updating it to a modern context. I just think that, like, I think Shogun is amazing. I think the fact that FX put all of their efforts behind it and released it as, like, a showcase series is amazing. And then at the same time, they know that, like, The Bear, taking a chance on something like The Bear or taking a chance on other creators who are looking to cook, right? Like Noah Hawley with this series and stuff. They seem to be an oasis for creators who have really good ideas to find home for projects that everybody else isn't willing to take a chance on.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I don't have anything industrially to add to that other than you said this in the teaser last time when we said we would talk about this. We haven't talked about her yet. This is the resurrection of Jean Smart.
Oh, yeah.
That's an industry moment. I mean, she's having a moment, and I think it started here with Legion. I mean, there'll be fans who say, well, no, maybe there were these other series, but then now we have Hacks, which is fantastic on Max and about to be back for season 3. So
no, I think you're 1,000% right. When Jean Smart shows up in the first episode of Legion, the very first thing that I thought about was designing women. So I don't know what she did between designing women and Legion. I'm sure she was a working actress. She had a whole lot of things, but I wasn't exposed to any of them. But coming out of Legion, she's been in Mayor of Easttown. She's been in Hacks. She's been in movies since then that I'm like, oh my gosh, there's Jean Smart again. It seems like this series gave her career a new lease on life. Oh, yeah. She was in Babylon last year. That was the movie that I was trying to think of. She was in Damien Chazelle's Babylon.
I mean, there's a ton of TV, but like 4 episodes of Hawaii Five-0, you know, 1 episode of Psych, like the early 2000s, Samantha Who, Kim, well, she did some voice acting for Kim Possible, which I think was kind of a big kids animated show. 43 episodes of that, like 35 episodes of Samantha Who. But, you know, I mean, this is Fargo and Legion are a slightly elevated series. You know,
yeah, this feels like it's kind of out of the Tarantino playbook a little bit, right? You know, Tarantino would always have those actors that he loved from the 70s. And so when he started making his own movies, he was like, well, let me put Robert Forster in my movie. Let me put Pam Grier in my movie. Let me put John Travolta in my movie. You know, it feels like obvious now, but at the time it was like, wait, you're taking a risk on Jean Smart for your prestige TV series, you know? But now it makes perfect sense in hindsight because these people know what it is that they're looking for from these actors. And so, yeah.
Good stuff.
I love it. I love it when actors that you haven't seen in a long time come back. I'm all for, give me Annie Potts back. I'm sure she's in a Ghostbusters right now, but you can give her something else, you know? Give me Delta Burke. What's she up to?
Delta Burke.
Gotta be in something, right?
Let's go. What is Delta Burke doing? I'm looking.
You're gonna look up Delta Burke.
I'm looking at, let's see, Delta Burke, IMDb. This is for all you listeners. What's she doing right now? Has not worked since 20. Well, IMDb says 2019. She was in Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, which was a TV series.
All right.
So
she's doing Lifetime stuff probably.
Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. I think we did it. Legion. It's an amazing show. I would say if I were reviewing the series, I would say the first season is just straight up incredible. The second season takes the first season's, premise and sort of dials up the weirdness even more, but it gets a little long. It becomes kind of like a Monster of the Week show, which is a little strange for this type of series. And then season 3 sort of feels like an obligated season to bring in like characters like Charles Xavier and stuff. I think they were starting to get notes from, you know, the 20th Century Fox higher-ups. Like, you need to put more X-Men in this series kind of thing.
I had to press pause on season 2, episode 1 during the dance number. I was like, okay, what are we doing? All right, roll the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin
all right.
Are we going to call an audible and just do Shogun?
Oh, my gosh. Here we go.
I'm going to solve.
All right.
Kornokuro Cabinet.
Okay, this is a show that I don't know what it is, so I'm going to ask you. The wheel has spun, and it has landed on a television show called Dave.
Okay, let's talk about that. That's my FX show.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of taking chances, I mean, it is a raunchy comedy, but right. I think there are episodes of profound spiritual depth. So do you want to do a half-hour comedy, or do you want to get into a more current show that is just absolutely loaded with religious storylines?
I think we should hit the Shogun iron while it's hot.
Fine. That's so great, because I've actually been wanting to go back and rewatch these first three or four episodes because they're so rich.
Yeah.
So give me an excuse to do that.
So we're going to
be over by the time we record.
That's right. So we're doing back-to-back Hulu. We're going straight from Legion straight into Shogun. So that's going to be
no money. We're receiving no compensation from the streamer.
I will not say that I did not manipulate the wheel in any way. I don't think
you spun the wheel.
So Shogun's going to be next up. Hey, Ryan, thanks for hanging out on the astral plane with me for an hour.
It's the only place I want to be.
We will see you in feudal Japan next time. It's